Saskatchewan. It's time to talk sports. The all-new Sports Cage is on the air for the millions of telephone users like yourselves. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll free 1-866-767-0620. And we're always online at sportscage.com. 620 CKRM.
And good afternoon, everybody. This is Don Hewitt with the Sports Cage. Sports Cage brought to you by Nelson Homes, supplying home packages and RTMs for over 65 years. And we've got a great show going for you this afternoon and later in the evening. Right off the bat, we're going to talk to two hockey players who are playing the game here in Regina at a later age. Larry Jaworski is 72, Ralph McMaster is 85. Now, how do you play hockey at 72 and 85? We're going to find out and why they enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to that chat very much. 3:30, bottom of the clock, we'll talk to Mark Steven in Calgary and ask him, what is Craig Dickinson doing in the hallways of the Stampeder offices? Mark's been watching what's going on with the former Rider head coach. We'll have other things to talk about with Mark as well. At 4 o'clock, we're going to talk to Jacob Faith of the SJHL. Of course, big game in Melfort tomorrow night. The winner will play Flin Flon in the final for the SJHL championship. But I also want to talk to Jacob about the amazing that league has, starting with Flin Flon. Farhan Alarji joins us, and he's going to chat about that big tweet that Nathan Rourke had yesterday, disappointed in the league and the Argonauts about what's going on with the sexual harassment charges, and we're going to get that's going on, and we'll get Farhan's take. Dante DeCaria is, the voice of the Regina Pats. He was just down in Chicago visiting Connor Bedard. We're going to ask Dante DeCaria about that little trip. That'll be interesting, and he's going to preview the big game starting tonight in Moose Jaw between the Broncos and the Moose Jaw Warriors, the WHL East semifinal. And the head coach of the Regina Rams will also be along, Mark McConkie, and he will talk about what he's been doing this winter and some of his recruiting, and it looks like he's done some very good recruiting. It'll be very interesting with the Rams season coming up. Also, what is going to happen at the Ram quarterbacking position. Now let's go to Larry and Ralph now on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can make at home. Call Western Pizza today. There are a few hockey teams in Regina whose players continue to play into their 70s and even 80s. The pension plan players, aptly named, are on the ice twice a week at the Cooperators in Regina from the end of September to the first week of April. Two of those players are, of course, Larry, who I spoke about earlier, Jaworski, and Ralph McMaster. And Larry is 72, as I said. Ralph is 85, and you heard it correctly. Ralph is 85, and he's still lacing them up. Let's start with the same question to both of you, gentlemen. How have you managed to play hockey to this age? We'll start, obviously, with Ralph.
Well, Don, you just keep going.
Yep.
Enjoy it, and you get out there for exercise and fellowship with other players, and I just like it.
And, Larry, same question to you. You're 72, a spry 72, I might add. What is it that you like about it, and how do you keep going?
Well, Don, I'm still quite competitive, even at 72.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy the camaraderie and socializing and exercise. That's a big thing, is exercise. And, of course, you always meet new guys that join the team. And some of the guys that I've played with, actually, I've been playing with them for about 40 years. So,
wow.
You know, some of them are not that new. But, you know, there's young guys that come in. You know, I should say young guys, you know, 60 years old. They come in and
young guys,
and they come into the dressing room and they just think they can fit anywhere. But, you know, that isn't the way it is. we have our little stall, just like a cow that comes into the barn, you know, he goes exactly where to go. So we sit exactly where we usually sit, and if a young fella comes beats us in there before we get to sit down, we kind of give him a dirty look, like, what are you doing here? Like, move over, buddy, because this is my stall.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's one of the, couple of the things, the reason why I'm still playing, and, you know, I mean, every morning you get up and, oh, my God, I'm not feeling that great today. My knees are sore.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of, and I should ask Ralph, like, how does that work with him? Because I'm a lot younger than he is, and I've got aches and pains, and I don't know how Ralph does it, but he does a good job.
Well, Ralph, how do you feel after a hockey game at 85?
Well, a lot of times I'm a little tired, and I enjoy having a coffee or a hot chocolate with the guys. There's a bunch of us that go after the games and sit and you know, talk things over and mm-hmm. what we should have done and how good we played and all that sort of BS.
Yeah. Now, Ralph, at 85, does your wife ever say to you, Ralph, what the heck are you doing playing hockey at 85? Does she ever say that to you?
Get out of the house because she has other things to do.
That's great. I guess Larry, and you both can comment on this. At this age, there's a lot of women and men that could never do this sort of thing. They haven't had sort of luck with your body, you know, hips, knees, joints, whatever it may be. I guess you have to have luck with your body, do you not, Larry, to keep going like this? Or you have to persevere?
Yeah, I'm really blessed. Very fortunate. I'm very fortunate that I can do this. And I plan on keep on going, but it depends on, you know, how things go. But I have a defense. I play defense, and I play with a guy that I played with for many, many years. And he's a little bit older than me, but he covers up for me once in a while. So this is really good. And like I said before, I hope I can go as far as Ralph has gone, but I'm not sure. Every day, you know, is a new day. So we'll see how it goes, but so far, my health has been really good, and I really appreciate that. I'm, like I said, I'm blessed for that, and I'm just hanging in there, and I'm looking forward to the next season, actually.
Well, I guess part of it is if you do get injured, the individuals that play hockey this long, they will let the injury heal, even if it's a serious injury, but they don't quit. That seems to be a big difference. A lot of people will quit. Oh, I tore my knee ligaments, you know, you've probably got players in your team, I'm assuming, that have artificial knees, artificial hips, etc.
Yeah, we do, actually. I know a couple of guys that have hip replacements, and about 5 years ago, I ripped my hamstring, and I was lucky that my son was playing with us that particular day, and he was able to pick me up from the hospital. And I was black and blue for a long, long, long time. And you just go out and, you know, and you can hardly wait to get back on the ice. I know it sounds stupid, but it's a lot of fun. We are very competitive for our age, I think we are. And we have some really good skaters. There's some fellas there that are like 63, 65. They can still motor. And, you know, it's nice to see. And like I said before, Ralph does really good for 85 years old. I'm amazed. And I just hope I can be like that. But it's just day by day.
Yeah, tell me about Ralph, the hockey player, watching him. Is he a good passer? Is he a good shooter? How does he play at 85?
Ralph is always in the right position. Like, he, you know, he doesn't have to skate too hard. And as a matter of fact, just the day before, I guess it was the last game we played, he actually scored a goal. I mean, he scores goals. He's in front of the net. He's waiting for the pass, and he puts it in. That's just the way Ralph is, and that's really good. I mean, you know, and a lot of guys, since he's 85, you got to be careful. I mean, you don't want to run over him or anything. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, are going pretty hard, but everybody watches out for one another, and it's been good, really good.
Now, Ralph, if it gets, you know, rough, if it gets choppy, Ralph, at 85, do you have to ever, like, tune some people in?
No, I don't think so. I think people watch out for me, but I like to get in people's way too, especially if they've got the puck and I'm trying to check them. I don't mind getting in the road. I've always played. I used to play defense all the time, and that's only been the last couple of years that I've played forward more than defense. But I enjoyed playing defense very much. I don't know. I think it gave me a little bit of time to see where people were and what was happening on the ice, like a bigger picture, and where you could check a person or where you should be to intercept a pass or something like that. I just totally enjoy the game. Just totally like being out there. And over my years, I've been very fortunate. I've never suffered any major injuries certainly you get the odd bruise or something like that, but after a couple of days, it usually doesn't hurt that much anymore, and you just keep going.
Now, I heard about a time, maybe a month or so ago, Ralph, from one of your teammates, that you had a collision with a bigger guy, and you went down heavily, maybe on your head. You got up, and you seemed okay, and you never missed a shift. I mean, have you always been sort of that tough? I mean, even at 85, some people will be a little worried, but you didn't seem to be, from what this person tells me, that you just kept going.
Yeah, I've had my shares of hits, I've just been very fortunate with the body. It seems to be fine. Like, I can take a hit, and it doesn't bother me.
Now, Larry, you talked a bit about the dressing room. Like, you know, you start playing at a younger age, and here you guys are playing in the 70s and 80s. Is there any sort of a dynamic that changes in a dressing room, or is it generally the same?
No, it's always the same. I think it's always the same. And I think probably I'm usually the spokesman in the dressing room. I don't know why, but I'm usually the guy that, you know, has a lot to say. And if they're in my spot, I'll definitely let them know. So nobody's ever bothered sitting in my spot. So it's been really good, really good. And I can tell you that I've gotten a few bruises from Ralph, because we don't always play in the same side, right? So, you know.
Now, your partner, Larry, I mean, well, I asked Ralph if his wife wants him to stop at 85, and Ralph says, I just got to get out of the house. Your partner, you know, mm-hmm. what does she say? Does she worry about you playing at 72?
Well, she always says, don't get hurt. Well, that's pretty hard to say, you know, what's going to happen. No, she's happy, I think, that I get out of the house once in a while. So, I mean, 2 days a week is pretty good. So, she's good with it. So I'm happy with that.
That's good. Now, I'll ask you again the same question. Now, tell me about your hockey backgrounds growing up, and was there anyone that helped foster your love for the game of hockey when you were younger? Because if somebody fostered your love for hockey, they were doing a good job, because you're playing all these decades later. So, Larry, did anybody help foster your love for the game as a young man?
Well, I'll tell you, when I started skating, I was 3 years old. Lived on a farm just south of Raymore, and my dad used to haul water by a barrel to make me a rink.
Wow.
So I started on that. That's how I started playing hockey. And then when I was 9 years old, I was able to play hockey in Raymore, organized hockey. And I'll never forget my coach. It was Steve Gaber. Very, very good man. Good coach. Little rough around the edges, but a really good hockey player. And from that, I played till midget, and then I moved to the city and kind of played just rec hockey after that, and never really quit. And as a matter of fact, I played rec hockey against Ralph, and I just forget which team he was on. But I Raiders. Played for... Oh, the Raiders, okay. I played for Uplands Pizza. I played for Western Pizza. I played for City View. I played for the Hawks, Normanview Hawks. So I've been around for a little while, but like I said, there's some guys that I've played with on our team right today, like the guys that we play with. Mm-hmm. I played with them for 40 years. So it's been fun, been great.
That's amazing. You used to play in a team called Western Pizza, and you're on the Western Pizza hotline, Larry.
There you go.
What a coincidence. Anyway, Ralph, tell me about where you grew up playing hockey and who influenced yourself.
Well, I don't really have any great influence. I mean, I never started skating until I was about 9 years old in a small town west of Saskatoon. And the local kids in the rink, and in the wintertime, what else do you do? I mean, you spend your time at the rink every night, or else out on the street playing, chinny sort of thing. And that was pretty much that way until I graduated from high school, and then after that, I never came to the city here in Regina until 62, I think it was, and never really got in with any kind of a team or a group until one of the guys in the neighborhood, when I was about 35 years old, he almost went door to door and got a bunch of guys, and we formed an over 35 hockey team, and at that time I think there was six teams in the league, and we played at those ungodly hours of 10, 11, 12, mm-hmm. Which was terrible, especially that 12 o'clock one. But and then after that, we just played together as a group, in every town around: the Pilot Butte, Indian Head, Balgoni, Rollo, mm-hmm. RCMP Barracks, you name it, the Pence, just any place that you could pick up a game against another team, sort of thing. You know, and it was just great. But there really was no person influence. Like when we started, we really didn't have a coach. I mean, you had some, maybe a couple of parents that drove kids around to out-of-town hockey rinks, but no person really coaching you, telling you what to do, sort of thing. It was just you get together and you go do it.
That's cool. The Sports Cage brought to you by Sherwood Co-op. From locally grown fresh produce, condiments, and Western Canadian beef, your barbecue tastes better when you shop at Sherwood Co-op food stores. Now, Larry, when you first go out onto the ice to begin a game for the pregame warm-up, and of course they've just cleaned the ice, it's perfect. The guys are just sort of shooting the puck around, maybe doing a little stretching. When you first hit the ice, do you still feel, in some respects, like a kid again?
Well, after I do my stretches, not too bad, but that's the hardest part, is trying to get your leg up on top of the board, which yeah. You used to be able to jump over, but now you got a hard time to put the leg on top of the board so you can stretch out. But yeah, yeah, I know, I'm short. That's the problem. You're 5'11", I'm 5'8", so that's the difference, right? But, once you warm up and everything, yeah, you feel kind of frisky. It really depends on how the day goes. If you get up in the morning and your knees are okay, I'm going to have a good day. But if your knees are sore, it may not be that great. So, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. I don't know. It's going to take a lot for me to quit, but we'll see how it goes.
Is there any sort of a special kind of bond that forms amongst all the older players, and knowing that it's something special to play hockey together at an older age like this?
Oh, I think so. I play slow pitch ball, and there's some of the people on the hockey team that play slow pitch, and then there's pickleball and other things. And I think any sport, you get together, and sure, there's always a bond between players, and you look out for each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just a natural thing.
Right, and you know what? I was reading an article about Terry Harper, the former Regina Pat, I believe he won 5 Stanley Cups with the Montreal Canadiens. I think it was 5.
It's got to be Montreal for sure.
Yeah, good for you, Larry. Good for you. Anyway, Terry Harper is playing hockey still at 83, 84. He's a youngster compared to Ralph. But he said it's the most fun he's ever had playing hockey in his life. At 83, 84 now, I think he is. And look what he did in the NHL. And he says he's having the most fun now at this older age. Anyway, thanks for joining us, guys. You were great. Very, really fun listening to you chatting about continuing to play hockey. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
The all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620 CKRM.
It's time for the Blue Jays Report. For Shorty Generators, keep the power in your hands with an automatic standby generator from Shorty Generators. Standby generator experts. Well, the Toronto Blue Jays are getting set to open a weekend series at Rogers Center against the Colorado Rockies tonight. The Jays coming off winning 2 of 3 games from the Seattle Mariners. However, that lone loss was a heartbreaking one, where the Jays, with runners in scoring position in the bottom of the 9th on Wednesday, just couldn't score with 2 outs. That eventually led to a 6-1 win by the Mariners in an extra innings. Now, the Jays had a day off to think about it yesterday, but it was anything but that for the baseball ops staff. They dealt Major League Baseball pitcher Wes Parsons to Cleveland for international signing bonus space and a pair of double bubble. Don't quote me on the last one, though. However, on the injury front, the Jays also were busy yesterday sending players to Buffalo on rehab assignments. Now, here's the good news. Catcher Danny Jansen, he's recovering from a broken wrist, and boy, do the Jays miss him in his offense. Well, he was a designated hitter with the Bisons last night, went 1-for-4 with a double and a couple of RBI. Now, if he's still feeling okay today, the plan is for him to catch twice this weekend, could rejoin the big league team next week. Meantime, relief pitchers Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, both going to pitch today for the Bisons. And again, like Jansen, if all goes well, they could be back in Toronto even by next week. And starting pitcher Alek Manoah, who it pains me to say just can't seem to remember where the strike zone is, he's also going to get a shot in Buffalo. He'll start on the mound for the Bisons tomorrow. No word on what the plan will be should the outing go good, bad, or indifferent. Now back to the big leagues. The series is at hand for the Jays against Colorado, and really it's a chance for them to get rolling. The Jays are 6-7 on the season in the bottom of the AL East, but again, they're still within striking distance early in this season. However, Colorado, they're coming into the bottom of the NL Central with a 3-10 record. The Rockies have given up a major league leading 89 runs in their 13 games. Could it be an opportunity for the Jays bats to finally come alive and maybe, just maybe, find some consistency and find how to strike with runners in scoring position? We'll find out. Now, the Jays tonight to open the series are going to send Kevin Gausman to the mound. Now, he struggled in the cold in New York in his last start. Now, his Cy Young nominee numbers haven't followed him to this season, as of course he was battling with an arm injury throughout spring training, which set him back a little bit. However, he's 0-1 on the young season with a 9.36 ERA after getting beat up by the bats of the Bronx Bombers last week. Meantime, Ryan Feltner will get the call for the Rockies, who will make his third start of the season and has an 0-1 record with a 3.27 ERA tonight. Can the Jays get to him early and into that bullpen? We'll find out. And that's your Blue Jays report for Shore D Generators.
Okay, Blue Jays.
Dave Thomas.
And thank you to Dave Thomas for that outstanding Blue Jays report. Dave Thomas, as most of you know, especially after the gala announcement on Wednesday, is the new voice of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And yeah, I enjoyed that report by Dave Thomas talking about the Blue Jays. And I always call them the Boo Jays when they lose, the Blue Jays when they win. And let's hope we get more blue than boo. Mark Stephen of QR77 in Calgary is the dean of CFL play-by-play men, entering his 28th season covering the Stampeders as the play-by-play man. It actually should be 29, but no league play in 2020 because of COVID. But, wow, he's going to hit 30 very soon. Mark, I wanted to talk to you about the Flames to start with. Of course, the team will miss the playoffs. Tell me if you agree on this. I think it's quite obvious that former Flames general manager Brad Treliving left an absolute mess, an absolute total mess, for incoming general manager Craig Conroy to Start the season, Connery had no cap money at all, zero wiggle room, not a dime, really. But Connery inherited also some good players who were about to become UFAs. He was stuck in an awful position. So from that point of view, Mark, has Conroy done a good job so far this year in his first campaign as general manager?
Yes, when you look at it through that lens, and thanks for having me, by the way, but when you look through it through that lens, yes, I would have to say he had a very successful season. He had to navigate, as you say, a real landmine of players who were coming up on the end of their contracts, and he had to make moves to get rid of them. They weren't going to go through another Johnny Gaudreau situation. So what they did is, they moved a lot of guys, Zadorov, Hanifin, Tanev, Toffoli, Lindholm, so they've been pretty busy, and they got a lot of draft picks back to kind of restock the cage, and also got some guys that maybe were a little, fallen down the depth chart in certain situations, or guys that they just wanted a second shot at to sign and draft. Maybe they missed them on the draft table a few years ago. So, on balance, I would say from that vantage point, he did quite well.
Right. Now, as far as the fans are concerned, do they sort of understand what's going on and understand that Conroy is now having to, I guess, I don't know if it's a rebuild or build up the team. Do they sort of get that?
Yeah, I think there's a general support that he did a good job. He can pick away at some of the moves on some of the deals. But no, there's a general sense that he got pretty good value and did some retooling for today, but also for the future. And, they're disappointed that they're not in the playoffs. Let's not kid anybody, but I think that's been a foregone conclusion for a while. So people just looking ahead at what they've got, and what they've got is, a roster right now that they hope is going to be far more competitive as of next year.
I don't know if you'll agree with me on this. I think you will. Arguably, although I don't think it's an argument, the greatest Flame of all time is Jerome Iginla. Would you agree or no?
Yes, he was a great player and right on top of the league standings and team standings in every meaningful category for way over a decade. Yes, he's the most accomplished Flame ever, no question about that.
Well, Lanny McDonald might be most popular. But, I think Jerome Iginla was the best hockey player. So we agree on that. He's now working for Conroy as the special advisor to the general manager, is his formal title. Now, his son Ty plays for the Western Hockey League's Kelowna Rockets, as you know, Mark. And Ty could be selected in the draft, upcoming NHL 2024 draft, in the top 10 because his stock, Mark, seems to be rising every day, really. Right now, the Flames would pick about eighth. It's possible here. How big of a deal would it be in Calgary if Ty Iginla becomes a Flame?
Well, there's already been plenty of speculation about that, and while Iginla's stock is rising, the Flames are plummeting in the standings as well. They're barely in the Seattle and Ottawa category now. So it's certainly something that's been discussed. Would he be the best guy for the team? He'd be the best name for the team. Whether he'd be the best player, I guess, we'll have to rely on the scouting staff and Craig Conroy to figure that out. That's certainly one guy there's a lot of pressure on to draft. But another one is Carter Yakimchuk, a defenseman who played, ironically, he's from Calgary and played for the Calgary Hitmen this year and had 30 goals. And it's been a while since the Flames drafted a real impactful defenseman. So that's another guy to keep your eye on as well. I mean, there's others, of course. But no, the heat is on, no question, and it'll be some very difficult conversations in the back room because, as an added attraction, Iginla and Conroy are pretty much each other's best friends. So how's that going to go?
Well, that's there's some, toughness about that when they have to make hard decisions. But, put me in the camp, if you will, Mark. I want Ty Iginla on the Flames. I don't care if there's a guy better than him. I want him on because he's going to have so much heart and desire playing for the same team his dad did. It'd be worth a pot of gold, really. Anyway.
Oh, Australia. You know, I can see that, and he'd be an instant fan favorite, and he'd have a lot of support from the fans and the players and everyone. But, you know, when you're drafting 7, 8, 9, wherever the Flames are going to end up drafting, you got to make some pretty clear-headed decisions. But I certainly understand what the popular choice would be, and that would be him. And, you know, who knows? The Flames have got 4 games left. Who knows exactly where they're going to end up? And, you know, maybe those ping-pong balls will finally move in their favor one time, because there's only two teams. There's two teams in the NHL that have never drafted in the top three. One of them is Vegas, and the other is the Calgary Flames.
Really?
They've never really moved up on, they've never really moved up on draft day when those lottery balls all come spinning out of the wherever they come from. So maybe it's their turn. Who knows?
Well, it makes no sense. You're better at math than I am. It makes no sense that you'd continually have bad luck all the time on the ping pong balls. It's I don't know. That's weird.
I don't know what the magic is either. Vancouver's had some pretty tough luck as well. And Edmonton had 4 first-rounders in the last decade, but we won't go there.
There you go. Yes. Anyway, as far as the Canadian teams in the playoffs, Mark, your last hockey question, then we'll get to football. Does anybody in Canada have a chance at winning the Stanley Cup?
Oh, that's a good one, because first of all, Winnipeg and Edmonton both had really good seasons, but they're going to have enormous challenges in their first round. So if they can get through that, maybe they've got a shot. I mean, I would say just on balance, they haven't played well of late, I get it, but I've always liked Winnipeg all season long. They've got an amazing goaltender who may well win the Vezina Trophy, so they're probably my best hope to move ahead in the playoffs. Then Edmonton, then probably Toronto and Vancouver. Their lack of battle readiness is showing up right now, and they're kind of struggling right now. Maybe they'll turn it around. They've got some great players, but right now I would have to say those are the way I would rank the 4 Canadian teams.
Well, it's strange what's going on in Vancouver. Farhan is on later. I don't know if I'll get to the Vancouver Canucks with them or not. I just wonder if they were working so hard under Tocchet at the start of the season, the midseason. They were playing like playoff hockey, whether they've just tired out. I don't know. But anyway.
Sure. A very fair question. I think I've kind of wondered about the same thing.
Well, a few weeks ago, the Calgary Stampeders and general manager head coach Dave Dickinson hired Bo Baldwin as the club's new quarterback coach. Why is this hiring significant, Mark?
Well, he's, first of all, very successful at Eastern Washington University in Spokane. So he's already had exposure in this market, because we get Spokane TV all the time, and I guess I'm crazy enough to watch the sports there all the time. But he is a guy that really has a knack for what makes a CFL quarterback work. He sent several players to the CFL, Bo Levi Mitchell, Vernon Adams, Matt Nichols, others, you know, that have gone through there. He sort of has an identity of what a CFL quarterback is, what they need to do to be successful in the Canadian Football League. And I always wondered one day if he'd show up here in Canada, not necessarily Calgary, but show up and be a coach. And now he's here. And I'm fascinated to see what he does when he's here full time, you know, in a quarterback room. I think it's tremendous. We can't lose sight as well of Mike Riley, who was under him as well. And those are 4 big names in CFL quarterbacking in the last, say, 20 years.
Well, he certainly knows how to develop the quarterbacks that suit the CFL game. Let's put it that way. And we'll see what he can do with with the group of quarterbacks that you have there now. Now, of course, former Rider head coach Craig Dickinson, he's walking the halls in the offices of the coaches of the Calgary Stampeders. So what exactly is he doing there with Calgary right now, Mark? And you were saying earlier before we were on the air that he's the same old Craig.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've always liked Craig. I get it that it was a different set of circumstances when you don't miss enough games and or win enough games, I mean, and miss the playoffs a couple of years, so I get it. But I've always liked Craig. Right now, what he's doing immediately, there's a lot of these pro days that are going on. That's a change. Even Dave said, we were talking to Dickinson a few weeks ago, he said that's one of the big changes, even the last 8 to 10 years. that Canadians that are at NCAA schools don't usually go, or not in the numbers they used to go to the combine. So they have a lot of these pro days with other players, and there's many, many more of them to cover. So that's certainly what Craig is part of his responsibilities. And then he'll be here in Calgary. He'll be based in Calgary, by the way, and then he'll, you know, be involved more day to day. But right now, he's kind of doing these pro days.
Now, that's interesting. Yeah, things are always changing, and that's one of the areas where they are changing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Jake Mayer, I was going to talk about Jake Mayer earlier in regards to Bo Baldwin and how much maybe Bo can help Jake Mayer. I mean, if you take a look at, you know, Matthew Schiltz is now a Stampeder. You got Tommy Stevens. But Jake Mayer, is there any chance that he could lose his job as the starting quarterback in Calgary? Or no
well,
chance.
I guess so. I would say, though, that on opening day, it'll still be Jake Mayer under center. But, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, prove-it year for him. He's, you know, sort of run a lot of the warm-up laps. So this is it. His contract expires after this year. He was erratic last year. He had some very good moments, some 4 touchdown games, 400-yard games. But then there were other times when he just couldn't finish drives, and that's why place kicker Renny Paredes was so busy last year. He was on the field, and, you know, there's about 2 or 3 games, I would say, that even one offensive touchdown would have changed things, and, you know, they would have had some space between themselves and Saskatchewan. I mean, you know, Stampeders did make the playoffs, but let's be candid. They can't be counting on 7-game losing streaks by their closest rival every year to make it to the playoffs, right? So, no, there's a lot of pressure on them. Let's not kid anyone. And, you know, is Schiltz, he's going to be a guy I think that they'll be more likely to go to if, for whatever reason, Mayer struggles in game. But we'll watch it play out. But make no mistake, you know, this is a big year for Jake Mayer.
Well, of course, Dave Dickinson is both the general manager and the head coach. It's all on him, really, when you think about it. What did you think of Dave's offseason with the free agents and whatnot?
Well, I thought it was very strategic, and I say that in the sense that they identified needs and went after that. They just didn't look at the top of the free agent board and say, let's go get him and him and him and that kind of thing. You know, Schiltz, you mentioned, is one. Another that they're really quite excited about is Damari Houston, the defensive back from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They secured him. Their back end last year was really unproductive. You know, in the entire season, they had 9 interceptions. That's the defensive backs. You know, and Cam Judge, the former Rough Rider, led the team in interceptions with 5. Well, congratulations, Cam, but I don't think that's his job to be leading the team in interceptions. And so they wanted more productivity out of there. They want to stabilize the 2 tackle positions. That's why they got Tate from Toronto, a guy that, when healthy, is very effective. And they did a pretty good job of keeping their own players internally. So, you know, as I say, the free agent signings, they signed maybe a couple of more guys than they usually do, but it was very strategic to pick up places where they thought they needed some help.
What I liked was when Jay McNeil was hired as the president of the Stampeder Football Club. And the reason I liked it, Mark, is because I believe Jay McNeil, despite the crappy stadium, despite the fact that that stadium detracts, not attracts fans, but Jay McNeil wants to get much more into the community, like the Rough Riders are here. He wants to get out to the people, to the schools and whatnot. And I just didn't feel that, you know, my opinion anyway, that was happening enough in Calgary in the past, and he wants to get that back on the rails. And I don't you think that's like a good sort of situation with Jamie coming
in? John Huffnagel was spread awful thin, and I think that's part of the problem. I mean, ultimately, it was under his guys, but he was spending a lot of time on football in the football season and probably just spread a little too thin. So he's in a consultant's role. He's around, but it is Jay's team to run, you know, him and Dave Dickinson together. So I agree they've launched a much more ambitious plan of getting out and, you know, playing high school basketball games and things like that. Something that maybe they'd let slip for the last few years there.
Well, and of course, I mean, when they talk to their fans, the number one reason that detracts them is the mess of a stadium that McMahon Stadium is. You can't argue it. The last time I was at McMahon, I was getting a drink and there's water dropping on my head. I looked up and it was coming from somewhere. But, you know, I mean, but what's frustrating, Mark, is that doesn't seem to be you know, anybody in the city, at city council and whatnot, that has any interest in getting this fixed up, nor does the U of C.
Yeah, it's kind of competing jurisdictions, and it's sort of a city facility. They have people on the McMahon Stadium board. It sits on land owned by the University of Calgary, i.e. the province of Alberta. So they've got to figure it out. And you're right, there's nobody standing up and saying, this needs fixing. University said they're basically just going to do essential maintenance, and that's it. So, you know, maybe they'll fix the pipe that was leaking on your head, but they won't replace the whole thing of pipes. They'll get out there with some tape and wrap up the hole, but that's about it, I'm afraid. They won't replace the entire plumbing system, and that's their approach. I don't like it. I don't get it, but you're right. No, and that's the one thing Jay said to me. He said he did not appreciate what an obstacle the stadium has become for fans. Between the goal lines, it's actually a very nice seating bowl, but it's exactly what you said. The moment you get up, you're in some kind of an enormous lineup or log jam of some description.
Well, there's such a difference between Canadian and U.S. universities. In the U.S., a university would say, we're fixing this and pronto. And we're going to find the money, and we're going to find some alumni that are going to help us do it with some deep pockets right away. In Canada, you know, I mean, just the way they slough off McMahon Stadium, I think, wow, what a difference in the two countries.
Yep, sitting around waiting for the government to do it instead of leading the charge. Yeah, I agree with you. And the actual real estate itself is very conveniently located, you know, where the stadium is. I just wonder why they couldn't sell off a chunk of the land, because there's a huge, you know, tract of land around the stadium. Mm-hmm. Sell off some of it, because developers would be lining up to get it. And, you know, that could certainly pay for any renovations. But I guess I haven't been invited to the U of C Board of Governors meeting recently, so it's unfortunate, because it's an obstacle. Let's not kid anybody. It's a problem.
Now, Wally Bono, Wall of Fame, coming up at McMahon Stadium, and much deservedly so. You know Wally very well. Yep. What were the traits that made him so successful? I mean, he had more success in Calgary than he did in B.C.,
Yeah, and his amazing record is he's the most successful coach for both of those franchises. I mean, think about it. It's a 9-team league. One guy's the most successful for two. I'm going to say probably, I mean, there's many things. If I had to boil it down, though, to one phrase or one sentence, he made the team believe, because before he became the head coach and then general manager, the Stampeders were kind of in the wilderness a bit. Sometimes they'd be good, sometimes they'd miss the playoffs, but they were never really a threat. And when they did get good, they always had to look up at Edmonton, because Edmonton was just so consistent and excellent. And that's what Wally Bono said. He said, I want to be consistent like them, but I don't want to fear them anymore. Like, there seemed to be just an element of fear. Well, this is as far as we can go, because Edmonton is in the league too. And when they won the Western playoff game, this is going back now, in Edmonton in 1991, and like they went into Edmonton and won, even, you know, they were down 15 points going into the fourth quarter of that game. That game sort of signified and symbolized all that Wally had said. You know, we're going to be the big boy. Now we are the big boy. I mean, he used to chastise the players for not competing hard enough in, you know, those off-season basketball games that they play in Red Deer and things like that. He wanted to change the mindset. So if I had to say one thing, he changed the mindset that, you know, Calgary wasn't just hanging around. Calgary was one of the big boys, and in many cases, they are the big boy. They're, you know, still among the elite, although, you know, a couple of tough seasons lately. But nonetheless, that's the one thing I would say. He changed the mindset completely that the Stampeders were one of the big boys.
Now, the quarterbacks, I mean, he did get a little luck, although he brought them in. The quarterbacks Wally had in Calgary, I mean, the list, you can rattle them off. It's incredible, the quarterbacks he had.
Oh, yeah. No, from, you know, starting, I guess, you know, he got to the Grey Cup one year with Danny Bear. Can't lose sight of that, too. And then along came, you know, Doug Flutie for all those years. Then Jeff Garcia morphed into a quarterback. Dave Dickinson took over for a couple of years. We had a couple of years, you know, that they had some other guys in there. Marcus Crandall came in, and he won a Grey Cup with him. So, yeah, he had quite a long list of quarterbacks there.
And no knock on Marcus. He was an okay quarterback. But when you can win a Grey Cup with Marcus Crandall, man, you're doing a good job coaching, aren't you?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, during the stretch in 2001 when they won, I know exactly what you mean about Marcus's career. It had its ups and downs and, you know, it wasn't a raving success, although he had a fair bit of success. But down the stretch in 2001 was as good as anybody. Even the guys I mentioned played, you know, 9 touchdowns, no interceptions, like a 65% completion ratio down the stretch in 2001 to win the Grey Cup. I mean, that's big-time quarterbacking, and Wally got it out of him that he was going to play at that level, and they won a Grey Cup.
Mark, always a pleasure chatting with you, and thanks for joining us on Sports Cage. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Back to the all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620-CKRM.
This is Don Hewitt back with Sports Cage, the Saskatchewan Roughriders. As far as I'm concerned, with one of the best off-seasons in team history for rebuilding this club, maybe the best ever. And they've done it again today. They've signed a 3-time 1,000-yard rusher, Kennedy Brooks. Of course, Brooks played 3 seasons over 5 years at Oklahoma, becoming the 4th player in Sooners history to rush for over 1,000 yards in every one of his campaigns. The Texas native totaled 472 carries for 3,320 yards and 31 touchdowns in 38 career games, adding 21 receptions for 209 yards through the air. Wow, if you just keep looking at what the Riders are doing here, I'm liking it. Of course, the Rough Riders will open their 2024 regular season Saturday, June 8th, the regular season opener, when they visit the Elks in Edmonton. That's it for Sports Cage for now. We'll be back shortly. Sports Cage continues in a moment.
If it's happening in sports in Saskatchewan, we've got it covered. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. On your radio at 620 CKRM and online at sportscage.com.
And I agree 100% with the big voice. Text or call us on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line 306, as he said, but we'll give it to you a second time so you can jot it down. 936-6262, toll-free 1-866-767-0620. Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, CapitalFordLincoln.com. I'm joined in the cage now by the SJHL's Director of Marketing, Jacob Faith. Jacob, the humble Broncos, they're facing elimination tomorrow night in Melfort. The Mustangs leading the best of 7 semifinal 3-1. If you could predict what's going to happen in Melfort, what would you say, Jacob?
Well, Don, you know, first off, thanks for having me on. But if I had to make a prediction, you know, the last 2 games have gone to extra time. You know, Game 3, we had a triple overtime game, and Game 4, you know, didn't take too long into overtime to get that one done. But these teams are so evenly matched. You know, if you're making me make a prediction here, I'll predict that we go more than 60 minutes. We'll have another overtime game in Game 5.
Well, I think that's a good point, because 3-1, it's not a 3-1 series at all, like you said. And Humboldt's really, they've seemed to have improved in some respects as the series has continued.
Yeah, and you know what? They had a 7-game series in round 1 against the Weyburn Red Wings. Mm-hmm. While the Mustangs, Melfort, were able to wrap things up in 5. So I didn't know, you know, what the old rest versus rust kind of thing. But you know, the Humboldt Broncos have came out, you know, looking like they're looked like the better team in Game 1 anyways. But you know, Melfort, there, that top line of you know, it's Hutchinson, Duguay, and Sliva up front for the Mustangs. Now, you know, they get a lot of ice time, so I think it kind of caught up to them there in that late 3 overtime game there in Game 3. But that's been a heck of a line for the Mustangs, and you know, standing on his head in Humboldt is Ben Motu, kind of shutting them down. So it's been a fascinating series to watch. It's been a lot of fun, and you know, I think you know, it's not a 3-1 series, you know, on the ice. It's as even as it gets. So either way, the next couple of games, or, you know, just maybe the 1-game Saturday, it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, if you're in Melfort tomorrow night, I know where I'm going. I'm going to cheer on the Mustangs in that good
Absolutely.
Series. Now, of course, the winner of this one, Jacob, faces the Flin Flon Bombers in the league final. And let's talk about Flin Flon. Like, the Bomber general manager and head coach, Mike Reagan, has players from Quebec. I was looking at it. Newfoundland, Ontario, South Dakota, mm-hmm. Manitoba, BC, a few from Regina. I think there's three from Regina. Yeah. Maybe his third string goalie is from Regina, too. Now, are the Bombers, would you say it's fair to say they're the deepest team in the league at this point?
Yeah, I think it's probably no question that they're the deepest team in the league for sure. I think they've got four lines, that could be a lot of teams' number one lines, and then they've got a bunch of they've got a deep roster with a lot of guys in the stands, kind of either healthy, scratched, or injured that are could be top tier players in the SJHL on other teams. But you mentioned players from all over North America coming up to Flin Flon, but it's actually been the local product. Justin Lees, he's their captain. Mm-hmm. He's from Flin Flon. He played a couple of years in Saskatoon with the Blades, and local boy, wants to spend his 20-year-old year in Flin Flon. And his younger brother Joey is on the team as well, and he's been one of the top players in the SJHL and really been the leader for the Bombers this playoffs. And he's got almost 2 points a game in the playoffs. Me and Jamie Neugebauer were having a discussion about, through now, who is your, kind of playoffs MVP, and Justin Lees, the local boy, the Flin Flon product, was in that conversation. So, the Bombers were the top team in the SJHL all year. They were the number one team in Canada in the CJHL for most of the year, too. And, I think getting to the finals the last 2 years for Coach Mike Reagan and finishing second place has left a little bit of a sour taste in his mouth. And, the team is obviously clearly clicking here when it matters. Two sweeps to open the playoffs, pretty impressive from the Bombers. And, whether it's Melfort or Humboldt, either one of those teams, it's going to be tough going up to the Whitney Forum and Flin Flon. And I think the Bombers are the odds-on favorite, but that's why you play the games.
Well, it's just incredible, the history with the Flin Flon Bombers. I mean, this is a little before your time, Jacob, but sadly it's not before my time. In 1957, the Flin Flon Bombers hoisted the Memorial Cup in Regina's old exhibition stadium after defeating Ottawa. Ottawa was full of stars. Scotty Bowman was their coach. Nobody thought they'd lose to Flin Flon. Bobby Russo played in Ottawa, my favorite all-time NHL player. But I think, Rob Vanstone, Rudo, I think they were the only team to ever hoist a Memorial Cup at the Exhibition Stadium. I could be wrong, but I don't know if you've looked. Have you looked much into the Bomber history? Because it's fascinating. Former players like Bobby Clark and Reg Leach. Yeah. Do you walk around in the Whitney Forum and look at the pictures, etc.?
Man, of course. But yeah, I guess first off, thanks for the history lesson there. Imagine Flin Flon versus Ottawa, these days playing in Regina. That's crazy. Yeah. But, of course, every time I'm in the Whitney, I love going to the Whitney Forum. Yeah. I love going up to Flin Flon. That rink is half museum, half hockey rink, half insane asylum sometimes once you get to the playoffs. those fans are a lot of fun. But no, the history up in Flin Flon, like you said, a couple of those names, and, just kind of seeing all the team, they've got the team pictures on the wall all around the rink. They've got the trophy case in the lobby, and it's one of the most historic franchises in the SJHL, obviously. And the team means so much to the community up there in Flin Flon. The Whitney Forum really is the rallying point for the community. And yeah, it just seems like everybody in town is, super engaged and loving the history. And, obviously they had a lot of success in the past. And, with Mike Reagan here at the helm, I think it's time, for them to get another championship. So, I think Mike's a great guy. Love rooting for Mike. Love spending time with Mike. The history of Flin Flon's great. I think it's great for the league. Like I was saying, that rink is really something else. It's a lot of fun.
And they've got that exploding bomb as a logo. I mean, they've had that back to the 50s when they won the Memorial Cup in 57. It's such a cool logo with their tradition. That's what I like about it. And you've been up there. It's like Flin Flon is built on rock. It's in the Canadian Shield. Homes sit on stilts. I don't know if anybody's ever been up there. I've been up there as a kid playing hockey a few times and fishing. But yeah, I'm sure when, Jacob, when other teams and players first come up to Flin Flon and see how unique it is, they must, their eyes must be wide open.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it, I think there's a for sure an intimidation factor when, you know, before, you know, I guess it's tough to explain if you haven't seen it, but I'm sure you've seen it, Don. But, you know, the lights go out and, you know, everyone starts rattling their bells and their noisemakers, and then the bombers come out of the tunnel with the smoke and the lights going. It's really like, you know, kind of the best pregame show in the SJHL, and with, you know, 1,500 or 2,000, you know, crazy Flin Flon fans in the Whitney Forum. It's loud. It's the loudest rink for sure. That I think the loudest rink I've ever been in, and I've been to quite a few NHL games, of course. But I think it was Game 6 a couple years ago when they were playing the Estevan Bruins in the final. Game 6, that was the loudest hockey rink I've ever been in. ever since then, I've known the Whitney Forum's difference. So it's definitely intimidating for the other teams, and I think the proof is in their playoff, and even I guess regular season, their record in the playoffs, especially the last couple of years. No one seems to be able to beat them in the Whitney. So
yeah, well, if Bobby Clark's hacking up my leg, I'm intimidated, I'll tell you that for
yeah,
sure. But Jacob, I mean, it's not the only team in the SJHL with tremendous history, and sometimes I wonder if people forget about it. I mean, you in Weyburn, you can walk around that rink and look at those beautiful old Red Wing team pictures. You know, you talk about the history of Jim Harrison, those big bad Estevan Bruins, a bruising style. So many players they sent to the NHL. Great histories in Yorkton. I remember the Terriers so well. Even when, if you go back to senior hockey, Jerry James and the Terriers, but they've got a cool history. Melville has an incredible history in hockey, and you know, is that something you try to get out there to the public? Is like, look, these teams have been here for decades and decades, and they have storied histories.
Yeah, and I think that's what's, you know, so unique about our league is you know, each one of our franchise does have that, you know, extensive history, and you know, guys like Jamie Neugebauer, such great storytellers, and you know, I think that's you know, that's some things that we've talked about, you know, for some off season content on SJHL.ca. And stuff like that, is, you know, telling those stories that, you know, to be honest, you know, I didn't know a ton of these stories too. You know, I'm obviously, you know, a little bit before my time for a lot of these stories, but, you know, letting, you know, maybe a young fan in Weyburn or in Yorkton kind of know about the history, as, you know, there hasn't been a ton of, you know, major success in the last, you know, maybe 5-6 years or so, but, you know, if you can celebrate the, you know, the history of your franchise and tell some of those interesting stories and get some interesting perspectives, and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of guys behind the scenes that can tell a lot of great stories as well. So it's definitely important for our league, and it's definitely something that, you know, that's something we need to focus on, is telling those great stories. Right now, we're focused on obviously the semifinals and the finals coming up here, but it's a great point to make for some off season content. Absolutely.
Now, there's lots of SJHL players. The announcements are coming up pretty fast these days. Receiving U.S. hockey scholarships. Jacob, maybe you could talk about that and maybe some of the feel good stories of the year in the SJHL.
Yeah, I mean, there's. I guess the biggest goal of our league, obviously, is to move our players onto post-secondary education and to play hockey at the next level. That's our goal, obviously. Now, last year we had, you know, I think it was over 20 Division I NCAA commitments under the SJHL. Number was just, you know, astronomical. It was the most we've ever had as a league last year. Now, this year that number's kind of dipped down a little bit, but you know, it's a developmental league for obviously all of our players, but, you know, guys like broadcasters as well, you know, moving on to the next level, coaches, trainers, all that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, when I think of success stories, like, you know, there's guys like, you know, what's a good example here? Like Carson Olsen for the Battleford's North Stars, won our Rookie of the Year this year, gets an NCAA scholarship to UMass Lowell, which is fantastic yeah. school. And you know, we got, you know, Matthew Van Blaercom committed to Michigan Tech, who, you know, I think that they were in the NCAA tournament there. And, you know, there's just a ton of great hockey players. You know, it's Ronan Buckberger going to Ohio State is fantastic. But, you know, there's, you know, guys, you know, committing to, you know, the University of Regina, U of S, and playing all across Canada. So it's great to see that, you know, these guys are able to take what they've learned from the SJHL and put those skills to the next level. And, you know, we hope that, you know, the SJHL players and you know, I've talked to coaches at both the SJ level and the next level where it's, you know, their guys coming out of the SJ, those are the leaders on their teams. Those mm-hmm. guys are ending up being captains for their university programs a few years down the road. I think that's something that we take pride in is, you know, taking these 16, 17-year-old kids, and then by the time they're, you know, 19 or 20, looking to go on to the next level, these are some young men that are obviously leaders in the locker room, leaders in the community. You know, we do a ton of, you know, celebrating and working with the schools and youth in the towns. Now, every team does a little bit differently, but we celebrate them with, you know, stuff like the RBC Community Ambassador Award and all that good stuff. So, you know, there's a ton of success stories that to come out of the SJHL, and you know, it's exciting to see, you know, what name 2, 3, 4 years from now, you know, when I'm looking at maybe a D1 watching a Frozen Four and say, hey, mm-hmm. maybe like, you know, Matthew Van Blaercom, for example, Michigan Tech, saying, you know, that guy's wearing a letter, for example. So that's the kind of stuff that we take pride in is, you know, building character young men and pushing them to the next level. And it's, you know, it's been great so far.
Well, you certainly stockpiled the University of Regina, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, about 80% of their team.
Yeah, and they got a new another one today, actually. So Chase Friedmore is, you know, I think most people would agree he's got one of the best shots, definitely the best one-timer in the SJHL. He committed to the University of Regina today, too. So
cool. Go Cougars. Yeah, so, that's good.
Yeah. So hopefully some success coming to the U of R here shortly. I know it's been a little bit of a drought for the Cougars the last few years.
Now, the NCAA will decide if they will start allowing Western Hockey League players to receive hockey scholarships, but it seems to me, Jacob, we only have about a little over a minute, that the SJ will still be fine in many respects because it's an older league with older players, and this may be, and they're good players, and this may be the pinnacle of where they go, you know, more mature players. And my view is that I don't think it's going to be as devastating as some people think necessarily for the SJ if the NCAA decides this. So what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I tend to think you're right. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, obviously when something, you know, whenever there's any rumblings or any news or anything on the socials, you know, everyone likes to act like the sky's falling down. But, you know, I think you're right, Don. I think, you know, we play a very much of a different style of hockey compared to, you know, the WHL, for example. Now, I think it is older, it is heavier, and I think it's preparing our players for that next level a little better than the CHL. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, just like everything going on with the CJHL this past year.
Thank you, Jacob, and enjoy yourself. Are you going to be in Melfort tomorrow night, or...?
I'll be in Melfort tomorrow night. Yeah, it's been nice to be home, kind of sit on the couch, watch the Masters a little bit today. But back on the road tomorrow. It's the best time of year, so no problem.
Thank you for joining us on the Cage. That's the SJHL's Director of Marketing, Jacob Faith. Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Don't miss a minute of the all-new Sports Cage. Podcasts are posted at sportscage.com. 620 CKRM.
Here in Saskatchewan, one of the first signs of spring or summer is watching the Masters. Everything is so green and beautiful. It's Don Hewitt here on Sports Cage. And it just makes you feel good after our prairie winter, even though it was pretty mild. And, of course, the Masters underway today. And three Americans, unfortunately for Canada, are atop the leaderboard. Bryson DeChambeau is in first place, plus one. That's crazy. Wait a minute. Where are these numbers? Oh, they're a little goofy here. But anyway, It's just so beautiful to watch the Masters. Always one of my favorite, events to watch in sports. I would have to say that one of my bucket list hopes and dreams is to go to the Masters. But then when I look at my pocketbook, I'm not going to make it. I was looking at the prices to go to the Masters, and it is like super expensive, like unbelievably expensive, I would say. So so much for that dream. But anyway, Corey Connor has fallen down the leaderboard, the Canadian, which is unfortunate. As far as Tiger Woods is concerned, you know, he's not doing all that bad when you consider he walks like I do. That's how bad it is. Let's go to Travis Stewart with Chase the Ace.
Thank you, Don. Well, you were talking about money for Masters. Maybe we could give some money away. Somebody could be going to the Masters.
Nice transition.
I'm sitting in the boardroom with John with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Foundation. It's another edition of Chase the Ace. We got $1,682 for the weekly prize. The grand prize is sitting at $53,965.
It's getting up there.
It's getting up there, John.
Mm-hmm.
John's got his trusty old laptop in front of him. He's going to do the spin of the lucky wheel, and we're going to find our weekly winner.
Here we go.
Finding our winner, who's winning at least $1,682 and possibly more.
Our weekly winner is Glenn Scrimshaw of Saskatoon.
That's a great name. Glenn Scrimshaw of Saskatoon. Well, Glenn, if you're listening, we're going to try to get you on the line. You won at least $1,682 from the Rough Rider Foundation. Now, John, we keep talking about all the fantastic things yourself and the foundation are up to. You guys still got that comedy night coming up we were talking about last week. Fill the folks in on what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. This April's been a really, really busy month just with our guys out in the community. And then while we've been doing that, we also have been planning basically our comedy night to be able to fundraise some of these initiatives or our programs that we're going to do. And so that's April 20th. It's at the Ramada. I'm really excited to announce we're officially sold out of tables.
You are?
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
It is a great problem to have. It just goes to show you that, one, people are comedy fans, but two, they're always willing to rally around a really good cause. And yeah, I'm excited. We got Jody Peters from rural Saskatchewan coming in. And just again, I think I was chatting with you a couple weeks ago just about one of my favorite parts of the job is when I get to go and just watch basically a bunch of comedy and then bring some selections to our committee and try choose. And so I'm really looking forward to Jody. And then we have Ivan Decker out of British Columbia coming yeah, should be good.
Nice.
Yep.
You guys are always busy. We're getting closer and closer to the season, but even in the off season, you guys are always up to fun things. You were talking about some feel good stories that were coming out recently.
Absolutely. One of the cool parts of having Rob Vanstone on our staff now as Rough Rider historian is he goes and he writes some stories for the foundation in the off season, and one of those was about a Win with Wellness presentation, and so Rob had a great story that came out just over a week ago where he went and watched a Mitch Pickton Win with Wellness presentation. And it was just so cool because he was really, really honest about what he was going through. He had a dog that was just going through a couple of vet visits and things weren't looking so good. And just like his world was really, he was going through a tough time. And he just said, like, he went to this presentation that was talking about stress and anxiety. And just even though it's a presentation that's meant for kids in elementary school, he was just in awe on how much it helped him and just couldn't stop talking about it. If you haven't seen the article or the story, it's on Ryderville.com. It's on our foundation Facebook pages. He does such a good job about sharing just the importance and impact that the mental health aspect and anxiety had on him and how important it is to manage that stress.
That's incredible. So, the money you're spending for Chase the Ace tickets helps out the foundation, and you get to hear incredible stories like that talking about mental health. And it sounds like we have Glenn Scrimshaw on the line. Glenn, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing on this Friday?
Oh, well, I'm feeling pretty lucky now that I got the phone call.
What are you up to on your Friday there, Glenn?
Doing a little painting. That's my job. I'm an artist. Glenn Scrimshaw is my name, so...
Oh, you're an artist.
Nice.
I'll have to check you out, Glenn. Glenn Scrimshaw.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Glenn, this will buy you some nice paintbrushes and canvases. $1,682. You won at least.
Okay.
And possibly, wow, if you draw that ace of spades, Glenn, you can win $53,965. So we got a board in front of us with a deck of cards. We got a bunch of envelopes. Pick a number between 1 and 52, Glenn.
17
is open. Yes. Let's see. So John from the Rough Rider Foundation is sitting across from me. He's got number 17 in his hands in a sealed envelope. He is ripping it open. The anticipation is building. We can't wait, Glenn, to see what you're winning. 17 is... Lucky card is the...
It's a spades, but it's the jack of spades.
Jack of spades. You were darn close there, Glenn.
It was the right suit.
But at least you won $1,682 there, Glenn.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
Thank you.
Good money to spend. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the East Saskatchewan Rough Rider Foundation. And I hope you have a great rest of your Friday. Good luck with your painting there, Glenn.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
There we go. All right, John, another one in the books, $53,000 and climbing. So we want to get more people involved buying Chase Ace tickets. Fill them in, as always.
Yeah. Again, tickets are back on sale at 5 p.m. today. I'm always going to push that you can get that subscription purchase when you go and buy your tickets. That way, you don't have to worry about it. Week over week, it just purchases your tickets for you every Monday or Tuesday. And, yeah, let's just keep this pot going, and let's keep raising some great money because it really is making a big impact in our community.
Awesome. Thanks for coming in again, John.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
That's another edition of Chasey Ace Rider Edition.
The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. 620 CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt back with the Sports Cage, brought to you by Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right at Bronco Plumbing and Heating. Call them at 781-2090. Now, TSN's Farhan Lodgy joins us now on the cage. Farhan, former BC Lions star Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke, now with the New England Patriots, voicing concern over the past few days, as you well know, regarding the time being taken in the investigation of Argo quarterback Chad Kelly on sexual harassment charges made by a former Argo female coach. On X, he tweeted the following, in case nobody's seen it: I'm disappointed with the lack of urgency expressed by both the CFL and the Toronto Argos. This issue must be viewed with the utmost seriousness and concern for the truth. What example are we setting for boys and girls across Canada if we can't practice what we preach? So, Farhan, what is your view on Nathan's tweet?
Well, look, I'm impressed and I applaud Nathan for saying something, right? I mean, some of us are in a challenging position to editorialize on it. I know from our perspective at TSN, we broke the story with Rick Westhead. And certainly we are not going to separate ourselves from continuing to report on the facts of the story. You know, we're in a different spot this week because I've been so consumed with the Canucks and Naylor's away on vacation. But, you know, generally we're still, you know, invested in making sure that information comes out rightly or wrongly. And, you know, from Nathan's perspective, Nathan's a guy that does the right things, right? He carries himself a certain way, prides himself on how to best represent yourself and the organization. And, you know, and it also shows you that Nathan's still very, very invested in and paying attention to the Canadian Football League. So that's also a positive, right? That if things go the wrong way for him in England, that he knows what's going on up here on a regular basis. I'm surprised he said it, to be honest. It's not like Nathan to want to wade into controversial topics, but he's not wrong in anything he's said.
Right. I guess the only thing I would say about that, he's not wrong. I agree. But these investigations do take time. There's so many different levels in investigations like this. So, like in my view, I mean, you've got investigators talking to different players, team leaders, to Chad Kelly himself, to the coach that feels that she was victimized by this. Lawyers are involved. How many times do things go quickly when a lawyer is involved, Farhan? But so the only thing I would say is I don't criticize the league or the Argos for this, because it's a longer process, unfortunately.
Yeah, look, I think the league would like to go as fast as they can. I think the Argos want some clarity that if this... Look, talking to people, at the Combine and at other places, my gut tells me that I think there's people around it who don't believe something serious is going to come out of this, okay? So, again, that's just conjecture, just based on what certain people believe the evidence to be and, what position the league is going to be in to act on certain areas that, it might be a couple of games or what have you. And listen, that's not come from anybody at the league. But, I think there are some people that believe there's another side to this story, and it's going to put the league in a tough position to be heavy-handed. But, sometimes if you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, the league does have a level of latitude because it's not criminal. Right, so there's the criminal proceeding, and then the league has an opportunity to do something just based on what they think is right in and around the league, right? And how the league wants to represent itself and things like that. So does that afford them the opportunity to do something more? Well, it starts with the legal proceedings. Then it starts with the ethical questions around it, and right place and wrong time, and should you have done this, right? You look at the Deshaun Watson case, which is far more serious, we believe, based on what we've seen to this point in the NFL, and what the courts do is a lot different than what the league does. And I think the league's got to put itself, in a decision-making process around that. But you want to still see what the charge itself leads to before you decide to make an ethical decision, right? So, I think all sides would like to do this in a more expedited manner, but you've also got the CFLPA involved, right? They have to decide who they're going to defend in this situation, and so there are a lot of layers to it. And like you said, when lawyers are involved, nothing happens fast.
Yeah, layers for sure. I wasn't going to talk Canucks with you at all. I was going to talk about different things with football, but being that you brought up the Canucks and you're so busy working on the Canucks and what's going on as they go into the playoffs, did Rick Tocchet burn this team out by playing playoff hockey right off the get-go and right through to three quarters of the season? Are they exhausted, Farhan?
Honestly, I don't know what you mean by burn them out.
Just nothing left in the bodies. They were playing playoff hockey. The first game of the year, they played Edmonton. And I think if memory serves, they swept Edmonton those first two games, did they not? And what I saw there, Farhan, was these guys are playing playoff hockey right now, right out of the gate, and they are looking good, but they're playing so hard, and I'm wondering, did they play too hard for too long and they're tired, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. I don't know if fatigue is their issue right now. They had a lot of success early on. Some of it was a little bit unsustainable, right? Just in terms of how they were winning, people have talked about the shooting percentages and their PDO and things like that. But, you have to play. This isn't the NBA where we do tons of load management. That's just not how it happens in this league. And you wind up playing one way, right? And the teams that are experienced probably know how to pace themselves, but it's a subconscious process, right? If you're the Canucks and you've never had success, and you all of a sudden, your coach last year gets brought in midway through the season and says, look, we need to build a culture and we need to build habits. And this is how we need to play. And then you begin the season and you got to carry that over. I think that's the only way to do it. You have to do it. If you're the Vegas Golden Knights, I don't even think they're consciously trying to pace themselves. I just think that they know what it looks like at the end, so they don't overreact in the middle. That doesn't mean they're not trying hard, right? It just means that the emotional ups and downs are a little more straight line, right? You just don't go through that level of emotional high and low, right? And I think for the most part, Vancouver's done all the right things, but also consider that, they haven't had their goaltender for the better part of the last 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked fine for the first few games with Casey DeSmith, where, you know, he did fine, right, well enough for them to win or not be the reason they lose, but he certainly wasn't the reason they won. And I'm not blaming him for any of the potential losses or Archer Silov, who's played in the last three games, but that's also part of this team. Not that Thatcher Demko stole games for them, but certainly got the right save at the right time and made them feel pretty good about themselves. So there's a lot of pieces to it. To suggest that Rick Tocchet should have done something differently and they played hard and should have played less hard, I'm not sure that's it as far as this team is concerned.
Yeah, I didn't mean that as a criticism, really. I just meant it as he had them playing so hard but not a criticism of him, really, because he's done a great job overall with the Canucks. Now, I wanted to talk to you about this because it's so unheard of in professional football. The BC Lions, doing something rarely, if ever seen, in pro football, and that's having and employing two co-general managers. And it seems to be working. And Neil McAvoy and Rick Campbell, both sharing the line GM responsibilities. The reason you never see this, Farhan, is because usually two different people can't get along with big decisions, and there's going to be some different opinions. Not that there isn't between those two, but it seems to be breaking the mold, and it seems to be working. So what is it about these two individuals that can do this, Farhan?
Well, first of all, I think their egos are out of it, right? Both Neil and Rick just aren't that type of person. And really, they have divided the responsibilities, right? In terms of which players to bring in, does Rick Campbell take a look at the guys before the contracts are signed? Sure he does. But, the reality of it is Neil McAvoy is charged with building the roster. And Rick Campbell makes the day-to-day decisions in terms of what the active roster looks like, who to scratch, who to activate, anything relating to injury, all of those types of things. Whereas in another organization, the GM might have some more input in that, right?
Okay.
It is pretty divided, right? It's a little more day-to-day as far as Rick is concerned. Does he get involved in player evaluation in the offseason? Sure he does, but in the season, when he's in the midst of preparing game plans on a week-to-week basis, he doesn't deal with that. Neil McAvoy and Ryan Rigmaiden, those are the guys that are looking around trying to determine who to bring in and, who to work with in terms of contracts and the negotiation list and all of those types of things. So there's a pretty clear division of labor, as it were.
Yeah, I guess that's how it works, really. That's the only way maybe it can work. I don't know. But there's some great CFL players, a tremendous list that have retired this offseason, Farhan. You got linebacker Larry Dean, who's now working in player personnel for Saskatchewan under GM Jeremy O'Day. You've got running back Andrew Harris, a local lad out there. You've got offensive lineman Chris Van Ziel. The Riders are happy that defensive lineman Jackson Jeffcoat has retired. I might say that. Defensive lineman Sean Lemon, he played in Saskatchewan, retires with a Grey Cup. Good timing. You got Simone Lawrence, who I think still feels he can play, but he's retiring for now. And a guy that everybody loves in the CFL, Henik Mwamba. That's a lot of great players that had tremendous careers, Farhan, that we won't see in 2024.
Yeah, it's certainly different, right? And the reality is we didn't see Enoch Mwamba and barely saw any of Andrew Harris last year, right? Yeah. And same with Chris Van Zyl. So their retirements are formal now. And, great players when you look at those guys, tremendous careers, Canadians that played not only the game at the highest level, but played typically American positions, right? In terms of running back, offensive tackle, and middle linebacker, right? They became ratio changers, won major league awards at various times, right? Whether it be outstanding player, outstanding lineman, Grey Cup MVPs, things like that. Just played the game at the highest level and pretty good examples for young players to follow. So, as they say with these things, it's a chance for new stars to emerge.
Right.
And, this league always has that every year, whether it was a guy like Matthew Betts a year ago that became a star. And I'm sure there'll be more that step into that spotlight this year. And that's the one thing we've been able to have consistently throughout the league every year, that whether you're American or Canadian, there always are some that break through and become stars.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a life cycle and seven great players leave, seven more will be discovered this season as usual, Farhan. Now, if you're a CFL fan, you care about every franchise, and every franchise means a lot, especially when there's only nine. And, you know, those big, bad Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the Rider fans don't want to even hear the name, but it was great to see their record profit, the other day. It gives you hope that, other teams are, they used to gun for Edmonton. Now they're gunning to be like Winnipeg, and it can be done.
Absolutely, right? And Saskatchewan has also kind of been the gold standard in that area for some time, just in terms of how good their business model is and how good the community support is. And I think what makes Winnipeg even more impressive, and I know you don't want to hear more impressive when I talk about the Bombers in your market, but there's an NHL team there, right? And,
yes.
And for me, when people tell me that, yes, it's not a big market like Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal, but it still is also an NHL market, and yet they're having significant success playing in the shadow of what's the National Hockey League in Canada. So, and Saskatchewan's doing great things, even though the team has struggled a bit on the field relative to what their expectations are the last couple of years, they still have a pretty good business model and are still doing well, relatively well at the gate, and certainly doing well in terms of their bottom line. And now there's going to be excitement with a new coach and some of the new initiatives that they've got going on. So, I think that's pretty cool too. So I think it shows more than anything else what the Canadian Football League can be.
Yes,
and I do believe it can be those things in BC and Montreal too. I don't know that it'll ever be that in Toronto, but, still Montreal and BC are two big, big markets, and it can be that in those things, even with NHL franchises. And what it shows is that you've got to invest money to make money. So what if they didn't take all their money and just save it and give it back to shareholders and pay the stadium debt? They did more things with it, and they reinvested in their brand, and they reinvested in the game of football in their community. And you look at people like Amar Doman and Pierre-Carl Pelladeau, they're now taking money, without having made it. They're taking it and investing it into these types of programs. So, because people need to know that you need to spend money to make money, and they're investing it. And they're starting to get better crowds and more on-field success, and that's going to relate to bigger bottom lines. And they'll reinvest it, because those guys, as owners, are so well off, they don't need the money, right?
Yeah.
So they'll take it and they'll reinvest it. And that's the way it's supposed to work and look, is that you need owners that kind of see the bigger picture and are willing to do it at the front end, not at the back end. And, so good for Winnipeg and good for Saskatchewan for being able to get it done and showing what this league is capable of financially.
Well, I mean, the owners, it's sort of like if they really care about the team, some owners don't as much in the past, and they want to make money or they want to get attention. But it seems like the last two owners, they care about the team.
They do, but it is a tough needle to thread, because I'm not going to sit there and tell a bunch of billionaires or millionaires that you are under some moral obligation to prop up this league.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the stupid part of it, is that you have some fans who believe that owners should get involved and know they're not in this league to make money. Right? And that's naive, right? If you think that, if you're an old school traditionalist fan, and I know some young guys in the media that are really, really diehard CFL fans and think that's how it should be, well, you're crazy. That's not how those people became millionaires. Right? So, but you would love to have some people that understood that I'm not in it to lose money, but I'd love to break even, and I understand in order for that to happen, I need to be able to invest at the front end, not just wait until I make money to reinvest. Right? So, not everybody should be expected to sit there and turn over millions of dollars and subsidize this for year upon year upon year. That's not how it should work. But, you're not going to get rich doing it, and you might need to be of the mindset that I'm going to put something in at the front end, and I'm going to get a different level of satisfaction at the back end and break even.
Farhan, you're as great as usual. We love listening to you. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
If it's happening in sports in Saskatchewan, we've got it covered. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. On your radio at 620 CKRM and online at sportscage.com.
And it's Don Hewitt back with Sports Cage, brought to you by Busy Bee. overhead doors. A Busy Bee will repair or replace your residential or commercial garage door so you don't get stuck in or out. Catch the Busy Bee doors and the outstanding team that they have, the garage door specialists, the outstanding voice of the Regina Pets, and I'm calling him outstanding because I think he's like really, really good. Now joins us on the cage, Dante DiCaria. Dante, we wanted your analysis on the start of the Western Hockey League East semifinal, which begins, of course, tonight in Moose Jaw between the Warriors and the Broncos. I'm going to game two with Kevin Glad, who used to call the Pats a long, long time ago. But you know these teams really well. Game is sold out, standing room only. But Dante, it's so cool because you just finished a trip to Chicago where you watched and visited your good friend, Connor Bedard, of course, everybody knows, star forward with the Blackhawks and former Regina Pat. Tell me about your trip and all you did in the Windy City.
Don, thanks so much for having me on. And yeah, really happy to share how that trip went. It was just so fun to see Connor at the NHL level and just being around the NHL staff, players, building, atmosphere. That's something that motivated me incredibly. And even more going into next season with the Regina Pats as I look to hopefully get to that level someday. And thanks for the compliment. Really appreciate that you think, I've got some talent and I've done a good job so far. Looking forward to improving and hopefully getting to the NHL someday. But yeah, it was a great experience. I had the opportunity to watch Connor score as they beat the Dallas Stars 3-2 on Saturday. And then unfortunately they lost 4-0 to the Minnesota Wild on Sunday. I know they play tonight. They lost on Wednesday in St. Louis, but this is, a Blackhawks team that is very limited up front. They obviously are without Taylor Hall, and everybody knows what happened with Corey Perry early on in the season, and they were without Connor Murphy as well. So a Blackhawks team that doesn't really have a lot of help for Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
In the two games that I watched him play, he was playing alongside Lucas Reichel and guys like Kurashev and even Dickinson as well up front. So he was kind of playing around with some different players on that top line, and you watch him play and you watch him play live and you can just see why the Blackhawks picked him first overall. And I don't have to tell Pats fans, Don, everybody knows what type of a player he is, but the Blackhawks need help. This is a Chicago team that needs to find some players that can play in the top six with him. And I like Jason Dickinson. I like guys like Kurashev and Reichel. I just think that they're maybe slotted in a top nine role versus maybe a top line or a top six role. So I think the Blackhawks definitely need to help Connor next year and maybe add some players up front. Hopefully they get a Macklin Celebrini type. He can maybe be that second line center. The one thing that I also noticed was watching the game, like the Blackhawks didn't have any power plays. They didn't get a single power play on Sunday, and I think they only had two power plays on Saturday. That's tough to score, especially for Connor Bedard, if you don't get any power plays. The goal that he scored just inside the post was just unbelievable. What a shot. 22nd goal of the season. He's just under a point per game this year. So nice to visit with him, meet his teammates, meet the staff in Chicago. They treated me like gold. Have an opportunity to spend time with the broadcast crew of Darren Pang and the Grim Reaper, former Regina Pack. It was fun.
Well, Celebrini, I don't know if you know Dante or saw it, he just won the Hobie Baker. Outstanding player in U.S. college, and all Pat fans, including yourself, we're all hoping that Celebrini goes to Chicago, because to see those two guys play together would be so cool. But has Connor adjusted to the big American city, Dante? I mean, I understand he has a bodyguard employed by the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I don't know. I was with him for a whole week, and I'm happy you asked that question. Him and I walked around the city all the time. We went to practice together. I went from games with him, and I met his security guard, Brian. He's the head of Blackhawk security, and he stands by the dress room like any security guard would, but he's not with him all the time.
Oh, he's not. Okay.
No. Connor and I went about our business like normally. I really love that city. I went to a Cubs game as well. Just a wonderful sports city. It is fabulous. By the way, going in Wrigley Field is just, you get goosebumps as soon as you check in, you scan your ticket. The smell that you get when you get in that building and the music and the organ, it's so old school. And you go up the stairs, there's no elevators anywhere to get anywhere in that building. You have to go up those old stairs to get up to the 200s and the 300s. And then even if you go down to the bleachers and try to walk around the stadium, it's all brick. And it was really cold though. everybody had toques and hats on, and I ended up picking up a Cubs toque. But sorry to get off topic there. But, you know,
no,
Connor and I went grocery shopping together. We went and, you know, went for our walks. We went around the city, went for dinner, went to the practice rink, went to the, you know, to the United Center as well. And no one said boo, really.
Like, really? Like, okay, so Chicago, greater Chicago is 9 million people. It's bigger than Toronto. So you're telling me that Connor in that large city could walk around and nobody really recognized him?
People recognize him. It's just different.
Oh, yeah.
So we would, like, go walk on the Riverwalk or something like that and just, you know, say day of a game, afternoon game, we'd usually go for a walk in the morning just to kind of, you know, get some fresh air, get the blood flowing. You know, mm-hmm. I would just kind of follow whatever routine he's doing.
Yeah.
And there would be some people that would see him and they would say things like, hey, keep up the great work, Connor. Great game last night. Great win. Great goal.
Okay.
And just wave at him and walk by. You know, you'd get little things like that. And I know that's something that he really appreciates and really loves about just playing in Chicago, how the fans are so passionate, but they're not over the top where they're saying, hey, can I get a picture of you? Or, hey, can you sign this? Or they're not obnoxious. They just kind of walk by and wave, hey, Connor, keep up the great work, big Blackhawks fan. And he'll say, hey, thanks for supporting, or, hey, you know, thanks a lot, appreciate it, have a great day. You know, that's all it is in Chicago. It's actually really refreshing to see that.
That is cool. I wouldn't have suspected that somehow. Let's move to tonight in a big WHL East semifinal series starting in Moose Jaw. It's against Swift Current. And, you know, I've thought this is what the WHL needs in southern Saskatchewan for one of these three teams to play each other in the playoffs. Let's start with the matchups between these two teams, Dante, because you know them way better than I do. Coaching matchup, interim head coach Terrace McEwen has done a great job, I would think, in Swift Current for general manager Chad Leslie so far. He's got former NHLer Zach Smith on his staff, which doesn't hurt. Moose Jaw head coach Mark O'Leary, though, has more experience than McEwen. Does anybody have an edge there?
Yeah, maybe the Moose Jaw Warriors, although the Swift Current Broncos have a lot of veteran players, despite maybe not having a ton of playoff experience. I know Ryan McCleary on the back end has a lot of playoff experience coming with the Portland Winterhawks. He's a draft pick of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I like Swift Current's backhand. I've liked it since the trade deadline, since they added Dvorak and Galloway and McCleary early on in the offseason when they made that big swap with Josh Davis, who had a phenomenal season with Portland. I like their backhand, even with a guy like Owen Pickering as well. Their top four, I think, is one of the top four D-cores in the Eastern Conference, and I think Chad Leslie has done a really good job. And obviously, Terrace McEwen has done a pretty good job as well with Darby and Smith on the bench. But I look at Moose Jaw, and this is essentially what they've been building for over the last couple of years. You look at the 2021-22 season, they made it all the way to the second round of the playoffs, and they lost. Last year, same thing, were unable to make it all the way to the league final. So this is a team that has a lot of playoff experience. They've been there. They've tried to get all the way to the dance, have come up short. So I think that this group is going to be incredibly motivated, and that goes back to your comment of Mark O'Leary. He's coached his fair share of playoff series with this exact same group over the last now 3 years. So this team is essentially looking up and saying, this is our last chance to hopefully get to the league final. They're going to have to go through Saskatoon. I think they'll beat Red Deer in the next round if they beat Swift Current. But again, this is a Moose Jaw team that can score at will. I look back at the last series, and I know they were both sweeps. You know, obviously Moose Jaw picking up the sweep against Brandon and Swift Current sweeping Lethbridge. And I felt like the Lethbridge and Swift Current series was much closer than the Moose Jaw and Brandon series.
Okay.
I know that both series had games that went to overtime. And I know that from looking at it, that most of the games were decided by two goals or less in the Swift Current and Lethbridge series versus the Brandon and Moose Jaw series. Mm-hmm. I actually did briefly watch some of the games for both of those series. And I just felt that Moose Jaw was the better team and the better club right from the start against Brandon versus Lethbridge and Swift Current. I thought it was pretty even despite picking up the sweep against the Hurricanes. So really looking forward to this series. As you mentioned earlier, Don, I think it's great for hockey here in the Western Hockey League, hockey in Saskatchewan, hockey in this province, and just really excited, I think, to potentially see a series that goes the distance.
Yeah, that would be actually great for the league if it goes seven. And you know, of course, the Warriors lost the last couple of years to that powerhouse Winnipeg Ice team. So, I mean, that was a tough club. I'll talk about that later. But let's go to the goaltending. You got big, tall Reid Dick versus Jackson Unger in the Moose Jaw Nets. Who do you see as being the better goaltender? Is it going to be just good goaltending on both ends?
I think both are pretty steady goaltenders. I like Reid Dick. To me, size doesn't matter. I think Jackson Unger has had a pretty admirable season this year. It's kind of neat with him. He actually catches right, which is very peculiar. You don't see a goaltender catch right too often, whether that matters or not. I thought I'd just kind of add that in there as an anecdote because I always bring it up on the broadcast. This is so interesting. You really don't see a lot of goaltenders that catch right. But yeah, it's maybe a little bit of a tough question to answer and maybe a tough subject to predict because I think both goaltenders are pretty talented. I think it's pretty even in that department, Don.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said like Moose Jaw's got a lot of pop, and we talked about the Winnipeg Ice beating Moose Jaw the last 2 years. Two former teammates with the Ice, both players early NHL first round draft choices. The Broncos Connor Geeky and the Warriors Matthew Savoy going head to head. That'll be sort of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's going to be a storyline that I think every hockey fan here in Saskatchewan that follows the Western Hockey League will be following quite closely, which star forward will come out on top. And if you look at just the overall impact between the two players that they've made on their clubs, and I'm not saying Matthew Savoy wasn't remarkable with Moose Jaw, he is. He's a guy that's already played an NHL game with the Buffalo Sabres this year. Mm-hmm. But you look at Connor Geeky, and things really started to switch around when Chad Leslie acquired Connor Geeky from the Wenatchee Wild. I think Connor Geeky is more valuable to the Swift Current Broncos than Matthew Savoy is. And that's no slight on Matthew Savoy and the Moose Jaw Warriors. I just already thought that they had a ton of pop up front, but it really seemed like Connor Geeky, when he came in, he just changed the complexion of that team. And you look at Matthew Ward, he dealt with his injuries this year, and Josh Filmon maybe had a little bit of a down year after scoring 40-plus goals last year. But I just look at the impact that Connor Geeky has had on the Swift Current Broncos since coming over via trade. I think he's been their MVP despite only playing half a season in Speedy Creek. To me, I think he probably is the X factor for Swift Current, although Matthew Savoy is going to be important as well.
Well, I mean, Geeky's a way bigger than Savoy. One's a real big dude and the other's not so big. So, I mean, with Geeky, you know, on board and the blue line of Swift Current, who gets the edge in physicality between these two teams?
I think it's going to be Swift Current, to be quite honest with you. I mentioned the D that they have on the back end. Tyson Galloway's a tough defenseman. Dvorak definitely has some size, although I haven't seen him play in a very long time, so I'm not too sure how tough he is. But just based on the size factor, I like just what he brings on the back end as well. I mentioned Ryan McCleary, and I mentioned Owen Pickering on the back end. Grayson Brzezinski is a physical defenseman, and Kettles is as well. So they definitely do have more size on the back end as far as the Swift Current Broncos defensive core goes. I look at the Moose Jaw Warriors, and Brenton's a tough customer on the back end. I like what Matejchuk can do as a two-way defenseman. Parker's a very steady defenseman as well. I don't know. It's tough to say. I don't think Moose Jaw's an overly physical team. They definitely have speed. They can play run and gun. I think Swift Current could play that style as well, but I don't really see both teams as being overly physical, to be quite honest with you. This isn't a Red Deer Rebels tub that's really going to come at you with a ton of power and a ton of punch in terms of their physicality led up front with Kai Uchaz and Matteo Fabrizi on the back end. This is a team that definitely has finesse, definitely has speed, and has a lot of skill, that making this series very exciting to watch. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a typical grinded out style playoff series. I think both teams are going to be firing for offense, and I think goaltending is probably going to be a huge factor in this one. It's really going to come down to which star players are going to be essentially shut out in this series.
Would it be fair to say Moose Jaw's got maybe a little more skill in front of the net to score, maybe a little more sniping ability?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you let them go on the power play, it's so dangerous. I mean, well, what was it? The game that Moose Jaw won 11-1, after the first period, I looked at my color man, Drew Posty, and I said, I've never seen a power play zip it around so fast. It was so tough for me to call. It felt like I was watching an NHL power play. No, I'm not joking with you, Don. Like those guys can zip that puck around the offensive zone so fast. They know where each other are. And you look at more than half of the players that are already on that power play, right? Minus Matthew Savoy. this is a man advantage that has been together, has grown up together for many years.
Yeah.
Atlee Calvert playing in front of the net. Braden Jaeger on the flank with Jaeger Furkus and Denton Mateychuk on the back end. And then you add in Matthew Savoy, who's already played an NHL game, and he's a ninth overall pick by the Buffalo Sabres 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That makes that power play incredibly dangerous. And I know playoff hockey comes down to keeping the puck out of your net more times than not, and penalty killing and blocking shots and playing desperation style hockey. But again, I think if you give Moose Jaw an opportunity to go on the power play, maybe this comes down to, you know, management by the officials, et cetera, et cetera. But hey, that power play can do damage. And if you let them score, then you're going to have a tough time in this series.
Well, you make an excellent point, because while Sofkurt might have more physicality, they've got to be very careful and not get on the penalty kill too often. That's for sure. It's so exciting. This is so exciting for these two teams to go at it. It's always fun to be in Sofkurt. And when you're in Sofkurt, you learn, okay, how does this city of 16,000 stay in the Western Hockey League? And you find out why when you go there, because everybody's a volunteer cooking your burger. And it's just, it's a fabulous sort of a franchise that way, isn't it, Dante?
Isn't it kind of sad that we have to see these two teams battle in round two? Wouldn't it really be even better if it was, you know, with a ticket to be punched to the league final?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
for
both,
sure.
Both communities, going back to your point, both communities are small communities. Like, they really rely on a strong season ticket base. They rely on a passionate fan base.
They do.
Not necessarily a city that has as many people as Saskatoon or Regina to pick from. Again, Sofkurt, you mentioned it, 16,000 people. I don't know the exact population of Moose Jaw, but again, a much smaller community. So it's nice to see these communities have success in the Western Hockey League, because not only are the team important to the community, but the community is important to the team as well, in order for these community-owned franchises, as we should point out, survive here in the WHL.
Dante DeCaria, the outstanding voice of the Regina Pats, who will someday call NHL hockey. That's my prediction. Thanks, Dante. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Touchdown! The all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620-CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt back with Sports Cage, brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries. Sask Lotteries, bringing communities together. Sask Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreational groups across Saskatchewan. The head coach of the University of Regina Rams, Mark McConkie, now joins us on the cage. And first off, Mark, I am very happy that your football team is now moving to the white horns on the helmet. I think that is great, and that's where the team won their championships.
Yeah, no, you're not the only one. I know lots of the alumni and board members, and I mean, heck, even the current players are pretty excited to change it up a little bit. So yeah, we're excited to wear them, and obviously we know there's a big responsibility that comes with going to the White Horns, and we're looking forward to it.
Right. I mean, I always say stick with tradition. Don't change tradition across any sport. For example, Mark, we all know that the retro uniforms that the Rough Riders wear should be their full-time uniform. That's where they won the 1966 Grey Cup. That's the glory days. Not that their current uniform is bad or anything, but stick with tradition, and the Rams have done that, so I'm glad to see it. Well, Mark, you've been very busy this winter with your recruiting. I want to go over your top signings in a moment. I wanted to start off the conversation with a young man who surprisingly took over as your starting quarterback last season right out of high school in Langley, B.C., Owen Seib. But now he ends up playing in, what, six of your eight games and winning the Canada West Rookie of the Year, taking over from Noah Pelche, which was a surprise because Noah had a good rookie year himself in 2022. So come training camp, is it a wide-open battle between Seibon and Pelche for your starter's job, or does Seibon have the edge because of what happened last season?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to play the best guy that gives us a chance to win, and I think we obviously showed that last year when Noah Pelche got hurt in week two. Then we actually played our backup before Owen even went in, and he got hurt, and then Owen went in and never really looked back and really dominated. So right now it's definitely, it's Owen's spot. It's Owen's spot to lose. And I know Noah's looking forward to the opportunity to come back in and compete and try to reestablish himself mm-hmm. as a starter. So at the end of the day, we owe it to our players and the coaches in the program to play the best player, yep. regardless of who it is. So, and maybe it's someone else, I don't know, but I think it'll probably be between those two guys. And yeah, looking forward to the battle. And I mean, they're already competing this offseason. We practice this weekend, so
yeah.
And they're both looking really good all winter so far.
Well, I guess it's a good thing, Mark, when you've got two young quarterbacks like that, and they're looking good at the moment. It's better that than having nobody or even one player.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. And I know, obviously, after the season, you never know. There's rumors that Pelche was maybe going to go leave and play junior football. And obviously, he wants to stay here and believes in what we're doing here in the process and just everything the Rams program is doing for him. And he's buying into everything there. And he's our team leader. And whether he's a starter or not, he's just a great young man. And he's going to finish up his ed degree pretty quick here. And he's a guy we really rely on for a lot of leadership on and off the field, so I'm glad he's staying. And yeah, it's nice to have. You never know. I mean, quarterback injuries happen all the time. You look at the Riders. Mm-hmm. You look at us last year. You always need to make sure you've got a few of those guys in the bullpen ready to go.
Absolutely. I think the Riders were pleased with what he did in training camp last year, as far as I heard. And now you have three players attending the East-West Bowl May 11th in Waterloo, Ontario. Linebacker Chopper Hypie, defensive back Dolani Robinson, and offensive lineman Connor Klassen. Tell me about those three players.
Yeah, those are three pretty special players. So Connor Clausen's a small-town staff guy. He went to the Thunder for 3 years, came to us, and he's been a starter for us for two seasons now, and he's done a nice job. And they go to East West in Waterloo on May 11th for the game, and really excited to see what he can do. And all three of those guys are very, very likely going to get their names called in the draft next season, so 2025 CFL draft, and that's how the East West mm-hmm. works. And again, Delaney's a big, tall, long corner. Should have been a Ken West All-Star. Kind of missed it by one vote, and because he had a game or two with an ankle. And again, he'll be a guy who's getting his name called in the CFL draft. And Chopper Hippie is just kind of our heart and soul on defense, middle linebacker, plays special teams, really does it all for us. And again, if he can run a good 40 next year, he'll be definitely hearing his name called in the draft.
Well, I tell you, for a linebacker, the name Chopper is pretty good. Not too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, receiver Deshaun Mims has garnered quite a bit of attention, not because he's the son of former Rider running back Robert Mims, but because he's a darn good football player, and he had a pretty good CFL combine. So how good can Mims get, do you think, Mark?
I think the sky's the limit with Deshaun. You just look at him running routes, just even walking around in the weight room. Like, he's very, very athletic. He's well put together, mm-hmm. Which is important. He checks all the physical boxes. He's got a good football IQ. We throw a lot at him in the playbook, and he's able to pick it up, and teams ask about that. And again, the amount of phone calls I've had about Mims is right up there with Ryder Varga and Anthony Bennett a couple years ago.
Wow.
Teams really like him, and obviously comes from a good background, a good pedigree with his dad playing in the CFL. So he does all those things really, really well. And again, most importantly, he's a good person, high character guy. And that's what everyone's been kind of calling about this week, asking what kind of person he has to do and all this stuff. And I think he'll get drafted. He'll get into a camp. And honestly, I don't really expect to get him back. We'd like to have him back, but obviously when we recruited him, a big goal of his was to play in the CFL. And that's our job, is to try to facilitate that and support our players, and I hope he makes it. That'd be awesome for him and his family.
So the rumors that you hear, how high do you think Mims will go in the CFL draft that goes April 30th?
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. I think, like, teams don't really like to share too much with me, and just because I talk to all, like, every second day I'm going to call from a different scout, but there's a few teams that really like him, and he could go anywhere from rounds probably 3 to 6 is kind of what I'm hearing, but you never know. He could maybe jump up to round 2, or he could fall to round 6. It really depends on how the draft goes for certain teams. And if they had a receiver higher than him, if he got taken, then that pushes Deshaun up to that next round. So it really, it really depends on team by team and how the draft goes.
Now, you're saying Mims is a well-built young man. There's the old thing called the eyeball test. When coach sees a player coming in the dressing room, and he checks him out physically. Okay, what does this guy look like, and does he look good in his underwear? Does he look bad? Is the eyeball test guaranteed to succeed every time, or does it sometime fool you?
Oh, for sure. No, it can definitely fool you, absolutely. And even just with like testing results itself. And like Deshaun tests really, really well. He runs a fast 40. He jumps really far. He runs good shuttles, change of direction. He checks all those boxes. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that even doesn't even translate to the football field. It obviously does with Deshaun, but we've got there's been past players, even just on like the Rams or even when I played in the CFL Combine, testing isn't always everything either, right? You still got to go play football. And a great example of that is like the Philpott boys coming out of Calgary a few years ago. They tested okay. I wouldn't say they tested super, super well. Like they weren't the best jumper, the fastest 40, this, but they're still the best players in the draft at receiver in that year. So, and obviously they're both having a successful CFL career so far. So you can look at it all you want, but at the end of the day, you still got to play football. And I'm just glad Deshaun can do both of those.
Oh, I think you make such a good point, because there's certain dudes, they're just football players, aren't they? I mean, you look at the guy and you see him on the field and how he plays, and you just say, well, he's a football player.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some guys that are just football players, but they don't look the part. You look at them and you're like, that guy is looks like a 40-year-old dad who's just been drinking beer, but he can play football. And but you kind of have it or you don't, really, sometimes, and that's definitely the case.
As we said, Mark, the CFL draft goes April 30th. I mean, you might have Mims going in the third round. He could go earlier. Is there anybody else on your ball club that you think may get picked at the end of this month?
Yeah, one of our DBs, Jackson Sombach, he's done a really nice job promoting himself this year. So he went to the Invitational Combine and was one of the best defensive backs there. So then from there, he actually got invited to the National Combine and went and showed well there, tested well there. And so teams really like him. He's a really good football player. Again, it's the CFL, so he's a little smaller than they like. He's only about 5'8", 5'9", and obviously they want taller defensive backs and special teamers. But everyone that talks to me, they really, really like him. They understand, they see that how great of a football player he is. So I wouldn't be surprised to hear his name called kind of near the later rounds. But again, we would just be happy to get him into a camp, because I know he'll show well. And again, potentially could cut his teeth on special teams at the next level.
All right, that's cool. Sports Cage Club Performance brought to you by Nick Service in Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson, Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. Call 781-1077. Now, you've got linebacker Ryan Makowski playing on your team out of Leboldus. His dad, Gene, as we all know, is a Grey Cup champion with the Rough Riders, one of the all-time best Rough Riders, let's be honest. And I guess I just brought this up, not because it's a big to-do, because somebody's dad played on the Rough Riders, but I just thought, you know, I'm going to ask you about Ryan, because I thought the one thing I would predict about him is he'd have a lot of character.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and actually, it's kind of funny. So we got Ryan Makowski, the linebacker, and we just signed Nick Makowski, his older brother from the Thunder, who's an O-lineman. So
we're
trying to get the whole family in here. And actually, a lot of our staff was doing the high school spring league evaluations this past week. And there's another Makowski brother, I think, in grade 10, too. So we'll probably have to try to get him as well in a few years. But yeah, Gene's an outstanding guy and role model and leader in the community. And obviously, that definitely translated into his household, because his kids are a 10 out of 10 character, great people.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing that we want in our program. And yeah, you can tell they got a great household there, and they do things the right way, and it's definitely translated into their children.
Well, I mean, your trainer that does the nameplates, if you've got three Makowskis, what's he going to do? Everybody else think they're seeing double, or do you go Makowski 1 in the back of their jerseys? Makowski, I don't know. I guess they have to figure that out.
We might have to, yeah. Well, and the funny part is, like, that's not even that bad. Right now, we got four Sombachs on our team. There's four Sombach brothers, and they all play the same position. Yeah. So we've been down that road before, so I'm sure Bob Thomas or Quimacat can figure something out.
Oh, that is so cool. Let's go to your off-season recruiting. You just announced not too long ago Cam Machard, a defensive lineman, 6'5", 275, 2023 CJFL First Team All-Canadian. Looks pretty good there, I would say, Mark.
Yeah, he's a nice player. He's a great guy, great football player. And we tried to recruit him in 2021 coming out of the Calgary Colts, and he ended up going to Guelph University in Ontario, and we were super close. We just missed it with him, and then he went there and wasn't didn't get everything that was promised type thing, and ended up going to play for the Sun, Okanagan Sun, and now he's coming here, so we're pretty excited to get him. We've had our eye on him for a number of years, and he's just one of many great recruits I think we've had this year. And you know it's a good recruiting class when you get other U Sports head coaches texting you being like, holy crap, you guys are doing a good job.
Oh, that's good.
Really filling out your roster. And so, again, I think Coach Bruce Anderson, our recruiting coordinator, has done a great job putting together a solid plan, and we've really just gone in and put our head down and executed and signed some big-name guys, and hopefully it translates to some wins next year on the football field.
Well, Riley Schick, offensive line, 6'1", 300 from the Thunder, but he's been on the Rider practice roster. This guy looks like he's going to add some real physicality, Mark, to your O-line.
Definitely, yeah. And he's coming off a knee injury, and but he's all in, and he's again another great high character young man. he's been to a few of our practices, and obviously he's not allowed to practice because he's injured and everything. But he's there, he's dialed in, he knows the center calls, he knows the plays already, and he's been there. Like, that was his first weekend, and he literally is like, "Can I have a playbook?" Like, the second he signed, and you can tell he's a pro. Like, he's obviously been around the Riders, he's hung around those guys. He understands what it takes, and he wants to play in the pro level, so he's really dialed in on that, and he's just been a great addition to the team, even though he hasn't really even played yet.
Sports Cage brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries, bringing communities together. Saskatchewan Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreational groups across Saskatchewan. Now, some of these former junior players, Mark, they're a little older, of course, than recruits right out of high school. And you got the Vanier Cup being played in Regina in, I believe, 2025. So is this part of your plan? I mean, you're looking at 2025. I know you're right now you're just looking at 2024, but you're thinking about, oh boy, playing the Vanier Cup at home. Wouldn't that be cool? Are you looking at maybe some more experienced players now when you're thinking about 2025?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we obviously in 2022 we had a really strong year. We finished in second place and had like one of the best defensive line, and then we lost a lot of those guys to the CFL and graduation. So we knew last year was a bit of a, I don't want to call it a rebuild year, but it ended up being a rebuild year, right? Young quarterback, young running back, young guys on defense starting, and we just weren't ready to compete at the U Sports level, and some of the other teams had lots of their guys returning, so we just weren't at that level. And then all of a sudden now it's like, hey, the Vanier is coming. Now instead of having maybe 3 or 4 years to get there, you got 1.5. So that's where the recruiting strategy changed a little bit. We had to pivot a little bit and go after some older junior guys that can come in, and they're just a little bit physically bigger and more ready to play, while those high school guys still continue to develop behind them. And that's to be said, like, we still signed some really good high school players like Liam LaBelle from the Boldest, and like, he might come in as a true freshman and play right away. And it's, again, like we said, it's just because they're an older guy doesn't mean they're going to play. We're just trying to build the best roster we can and put ourselves in a chance to win the Vanier Cup and be in the Vanier Cup in 2025 and even this year, 2024.
Yeah, you might as well make it 2 in a row. Why not? I mean,
yeah, that'd be a pretty cool storyline, yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about you feel the defense will be better this year with more experience. So which players from your squad last year do you think on both sides of the ball can make a big step up in 2024?
Yeah, again, I think like Jackson Sonbacker, defensive back who's in the CFL draft, like if he comes back, which I think he will, like he's a CanWest All-Star. He was an All-Star in 2022. I think he'll have a dominant year. Delonnie Robinson, our other cornerback, will do really well. And then obviously got these recruits coming in on the defensive line. We've got like Cam Ashad, Tariq, coming in that can really step in and play right away and have a big impact. So I think we just got better kind of in every area on the team. And again, on offense, I think Erickson's going to have another strong year. And I think Owen's going to continue to keep growing and building and continue to have a good year for us on the offensive end.
Well, it looks like your line play, both on defensive line and offensive line, you might be a bit bigger this year.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll be a bit bigger. Again, we were a little young and inexperienced on the D-line last year just because we lost our 3 starters, and 2 of them were first-team All-Canadians and both got drafted. So that's, that was a big task to fill and to replace those guys. But we had some guys that went in there and competed hard, and they're both like in their first year of eligibility, and they both did well, and we want to continue to bring those guys along. But we are bringing in a few guys that are a little bit bigger and a little bit older that are going to help kind of push those guys and compete with them and hopefully have them learn something and, again, just get off the ball and make some plays for us on the D-line.
Now, as a former Ram player, does it help you now as the head coach that you played on this team?
I think it does. I mean, I think it's pretty cool, pretty unique to tell players that, like, I came here and played here, and now I'm coaching here. And obviously I was here through the transition. Like, I had Frank McChrystal and Bernie Schmidt coaching me, and I try to do things the same way those guys did because I got a lot of respect for Bernie and Frank and mm-hmm. what they've done for the Rams. And obviously that goes way back into the 80s when they first were playing and then coaching. Yeah. And there's so much tradition and culture of the Rams, and you don't really want, I don't want to say an outsider, but because I'm open to that too. And I mean, at the end of the day, when I applied for the job, I was against a couple outsiders, and it was really just what they wanted to do. And but I think it's more meaningful. And the Rams family, the Rams alumni, everyone's really close, tight-knit, and so very supportive of each other. And I think that is important, and I think that's a big part of our culture. And just looking forward to kind of leading, and hopefully I can have as many years as Frank did. And I don't know if I'll catch him in championships because he won a lot of championships in the junior days. But I'm hoping to make him and Bernie proud because I know I look up to those two as coaches and mentors.
Oh, for sure. Well, those two guys meet for coffee. I don't know where they meet. Somebody told me where they meet once or twice a week. And yeah, if you want to laugh a lot, get with those two dudes because they are funny people to have a coffee with. That's for sure. Do you ever, Mark, if you've got a problem or some sort of a crazy issue, I mean, Frank has seen it all, so has Bernie. Do you ever talk to Frank or, you know, who's a mentor or Bernie or, you know, for advice in different situations?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I've gone for a few beverages with Bernie over the years and just kind of talking offense and
yes.
life and just everything. And again, I like was very close with Bernie when I was a player and Frank as well. Frank and I go for coffee in the off season a few times, and just I've got a lot of questions for him, and just talking about just again same thing, life, kids, everything. But then lots of it revolves around kind of just storytelling, and like you said, they're pretty they got a lot of stories, those two guys. And
oh yeah,
I love just sitting there listening. And we used to always bug Frank. We're like, what do you do as a head coach? Like, you don't really do much. Like, Bernie does all the offense and this. And then now that I'm in his role, I said, I don't know how you had any time to do anything. Like, mm-hmm. you're just putting out fires here and there and there. And it's he's like, I told you guys I did stuff, but no one believed me. So we had a couple good laughs about that over the years.
Now, obviously, Frank was a leader, and all his championships prove that. Now, do you ever sort of think about when you're leading your team and as leadership is concerned that you think back as to maybe some of the things you saw with Frank that helps you in that direction?
Yeah, definitely. Try to take a very similar approach, like I said, like a mentor of mine, a guy I look up to, and even Bernie on the offensive side of things when I was the offensive coordinator. Just the way he did certain things, his demeanor, how he looked at defenses, how he attacked the game plan, really tried to emulate them. And obviously, you try to put your own little spin on it here and there. But and then for team leadership and guidance, I think Frank was one of the best player coaches around, and guys loved him. And he gave it to you too when you guys weren't doing the right things, and he would be happy to get on you guys. But at the overall, at the end of the day, Frank was always there for you, on and off the field, 24/7 a day, and that's what I try to do for our players right now.
One of the smartest people I know you'll agree with this, I've ever talked to about football generally, offense, but all of football, is Bernie Schmidt. If you want to ask him, well, Bernie, what do you think's going on with the Rough Riders right now? Man, does he give you good answers, like really good answers. And you think he liked being in Regina. He's from here, went to Miller. His wife was a teacher, etc. But sometimes I'll think, Bernie, you could have gone places here in football. You are really, really smart.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was talking to Mike Thomas, the director of Football Saskatchewan, this week because we were doing that high school spring league. And we were talking about Bernie because Bernie coached him in the early 2000s and me in the mid to late 2000s. And we just talked about how bright he was and how ahead of his time he was with the pass game. In those years, like the stuff we were doing, teams would even try to do it. And then slowly you could see some of the CFL teams actually starting to do Bernie's offense and steal some stuff from him. And yeah, just one of the all-time great football coaches, and just super, super bright. obviously produced a high number of quarterbacks. And actually today, Noah Pickton got inducted into the U of R Hall of Fame. So I was there for lunch and introduced him. And one guy that he thanked in his speech was Bernie.
Yep.
He had two years with Bernie. And he's like, I learned so much in those 2 years, and that made me into the quarterback I was today. And it was pretty cool to hear that. And then, yeah, even like I said, just talking to Mike Thomas about Bernie and how bright he was. And yeah, he really, he did a lot for football in Saskatchewan. And it's been great to, I'm just honored to have to play for him.
Well, the thing about Bernie is his high ethics as well. I remember there was a time Darrell Easton was playing quarterback. Do you remember this? And you had a game one, a big playoff game of some sort. I can't remember the details or the year, but I remember Darrell Easton, to rub it in, instead of taking a knee, threw a touchdown pass at the end of a game. And Bernie came out and just chewed him out right in the middle of the field immediately. Like, he just roared out, "You don't do that." And I thought so much of, I mean, it was just a dumb thing that Darrell did. He was a young man, you know, you do dumb things sometimes. But it just sort of like, you play the game right, and that's what Bernie was like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's that's the infamous Ram story. I've heard that story many times. And, Bernie and Frank, they always did things the right way. And,
yep.
And actually, my dad actually coached, because I'm from Calgary, he coached the Calgary Colts, the junior football team. So we actually coached against Frank and Bernie, and that's kind of how I ended up out here, is they knew each other. And my dad was very, very high on Frank and Bernie, and they knew, because my dad, when the Rams went to university, my dad would kind of push some guys here.
Okay.
And, so that relationship goes way back, which is pretty cool. So, those guys are great guys and do things the right way. Absolutely.
Yeah, I knew you were from Calgary originally. I'm glad you came to the right side there, Mark. Now, Noah Pickton. Now, there's another brilliant guy for offensive football. Talk to me about his brain, because it's pretty big for football.
Definitely. Yeah, one of the brightest quarterbacks I've worked with, and I've worked with some pretty bright quarterbacks. And again, just about a 5'9". I'll give him 5'10", just because he got inducted today. But he's not 5'10". And just super cerebral. The anticipation on his throws, which he had to do. Like, I swear he couldn't even see the guys half the time. He just knew what he would be.
Yeah.
It was to be that dominant at that size, at that position, is incredible. And that's what I talked about today. It's the story of how. And nothing really was ever given to him. Yeah, his dad was a good quarterback for the Rams back in the day, but Bernie wouldn't have played him if he wasn't good. I wouldn't have played him if he wasn't good. It wasn't just because his dad was Dean Pickton. He earned all that. And the amount of work he put in the film room, like, it didn't, he wasn't, he worked at it, and that's how he became so cerebral and so good, is because of the work he put in. And it was honestly, like I said today, just an honor and a privilege to coach Noah. And like I said, he'll always be one of the top guys I've ever coached, and he made me a better coach and a better person, and I hope I did the same for him.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Thanks, Mark, for joining us. We'll be getting you back on as you approach putting on the helmets out on the practice field. That's it for Sports Cage. Monday, Brendan McGuire will be back with the Cage. He'll be hosting the show. Have a good weekend, everybody. Good night.